Hello, and welcome to this episode of By His Word. I am your host and teacher, Candy Carmichael. For the past 2 weeks, we have been discussing the life of Moses, the reluctant leader of the children of Israel, as they made their journey out of Egypt to go to the land that God had promised them. Last week's episode concluded with the last of the 10 plagues that God had brought upon Pharaoh and the people of Egypt for refusing to allow the Israelites to leave their slavery in Egypt. This 10th plague was the death of the firstborn of every family as well as their livestock if they were not protected inside their homes by the blood of a slain lamb on their doorposts. Since the Egyptians did not worship the God of the Hebrews, they all lost at least one family member. Even Pharaoh was affected by this, and he finally consented to allow the Israelites to leave. The people of Egypt gave the Hebrews anything that they asked for, and they rushed them away as quickly as possible to avoid further plagues. The Bible states that there were 600,000 men alone. This does not count the women, children, and an unknown number of Egyptians who tagged along, bringing the estimated total to at least 2.5 million people. The journey started during the night and involved taking with them all of their flocks and herds of animals. Most Bible scholars estimate that the journey from Egypt to Canaan would take less than 2 weeks, even with that many people. But, as we will soon see, it would take far longer than that. Moses and Aaron, along with their older sister Miriam, would lead this massive crowd on a journey that would change their lives forever. Now Moses was 80 years old when he began this long march toward Canaan. Imagine being the senior pastor of a congregation of 2.5 million people. This could easily be considered the largest megachurch in the entire Bible. Surely he must have wondered how God was going to provide food, water, and shelter for all of these people during this journey. Would the people continue to follow his leadership and trust the Lord as they had done in Egypt? It was a frightening thought that he surely discussed with the Lord in private moments. The Lord knew the people that Moses was leading. He knew that they had been in bondage their entire lives, and they had had food and shelter provided for them in spite of their slavery. They did not yet know how to live in freedom and to trust that God could not only provide their needs, but also protect them outside of Egypt. Then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. So they took their journey to Succoth and Edom at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of the cloud or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Exodus 3:17, 18, and 20-22. Since the people did not have a personal relationship with God, as did Moses, they were given multiple visual signs of his presence and power during their journey. The people had to rely on the faith and relationship to God that Moses had, rather than on their own personal relationship with God. Sadly, he was not personal to most of them, but just the one who could satisfy their earthly needs. The crowd trudged slowly toward Canaan, always aware of the cloud by day and the fire by night. It was an exhilarating feeling to be free at last of the labor in Egypt, but the people were also having long walks every day and still having to care for their children and their herds of animals. When we read of the journey of the Israelites through the wilderness, we usually don't think of what it took to provide food and water for 2.5 to 3 million people every day. Some experts have calculated the amounts, and they are staggering to the human mind, although nothing for God to provide. The people needed 2,000 tons or 4 million pounds of food each day. That would require the equivalent of 3 freight trains, each one a mile long. The desert got cold at night, and wood was needed not only for warmth, but for cooking. So the people would need 4,000 tons, or 8 million pounds of wood, each day. That would be a few more freight trains, each a mile long. And of course, each person needed water. Even if they had just enough for drinking and washing a few dishes, they required 11 million gallons a day. That doesn't even count water needed for bathing and washing clothes or for watering the herds. Just the minimum would require freight trains with tank cars totaling 1,800 miles long. When the children of Israel crossed the Red Sea, the opening had to be large enough for 5,000 people to walk across side by side in order to cross it in one night. Now, how God provided all of this for 40 years, we do not know. Did food just appear outside each family's tent each day? Did streams of water open up in the desert throughout the camp? We don't know. When the people camped at the end of the day, they needed a space that was two-thirds the size of the state of Rhode Island, about 750 square miles. Over and over again, God showed the people and Moses that he was perfectly able to care for that many people and for that long a time. So when we think that he can't provide for our small needs, we need to remember his provision for Israel for 40 years in the wilderness. What Moses and the children of Israel did not know was that danger was brewing in Egypt, the land of their captivity. But God knew, and he had prepared an escape plan. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal-Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, 'They are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in.' Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all of his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, "Why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us?" So he made ready his chariot, and he took his people with him. Also he took 600 choice chariots, and all of the chariots of Egypt, with captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, all of the chariots and horses of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and he overtook them camping by the sea besides Pi-Hahiroth before Baal-Zephon. Exodus 14:1-9. It did not take long to realize the devastating economic aspect that occurred when Egypt lost its entire slave labor force. It also did not take that long for Pharaoh and his servants to forget the plagues and the proof that the Hebrew God was far more powerful than all of the pagan gods of Egypt put together. Such is the stupidity of minds that are unregenerated by the Spirit of God. They could not possibly overcome the decree of God against their captivity of the children of Israel, and yet they marched forward in a futile attempt to do so. When the Israelites saw Pharaoh's army coming after them, they were very afraid, and they accused Moses of bringing them out of Egypt to die in the wilderness. They had felt safer in their bondage than they were in freedom, quickly forgetting the constant provision and deliverance of their God. But Moses said to them, "Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." Exodus 14:10-14. The Lord told Moses to stretch out his rod over the sea while his cloud separated the Israelites from the Egyptian army. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and he made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. And he took off their chariot wheels, so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hands over the sea, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all of the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. not so much as one of them remained. Exodus 14:21-28. Thus Israel was permanently delivered from the fear of the Egyptians. The Pharaoh, who thought that he was equal to God, learned swiftly that he was no match for the true God of the universe. He paid for his arrogance with his life and the lives of his army. Egypt as an empire was broken, and the people were without a leader. The children of Israel worshiped the Lord in song. Miriam, who was the sister of Moses and Aaron, took the women and led them in songs and dances of praise to the Lord. They sang this: "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and rider he has thrown into the sea." Exodus 15:21. Moses then led the Israelites into the wilderness of Shur, where they came to a place called Marah. Here the water had a bitter metallic taste that the people complained was not drinkable. Moses threw a tree that God showed him into the water, and the water was made sweet. Here the Lord made a statute for them: "If you will diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, if you will give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Exodus 15:22-26. Like spoiled children, it did not take long for grumbling and complaining to spread among the people when their needs were not instantly gratified. Imagine a pastor with a congregation of 300 to 400 people who has a few disgruntled people who complain to him each week. Moses was the pastor of a congregation of nearly 3 million people, and there was a mixed multitude among the people, most likely Egyptians, who kept reminding the people of the good old days in Egypt when they had their daily food provided. Now Moses went to the Lord with the people's complaints, and the Lord instructed him to tell the people that they would find bread from heaven on the ground each morning. On the sixth day, they were to gather twice as much in preparation for the Sabbath, when there would be no bread from heaven. This bread was known as manna, and the Lord led the children of Israel for 40 years, or fed them with this bread. Exodus 16:1-36. Then the children of Israel journeyed to Rephidim, where there was no water. The complaints rose again, and in desperation, Moses went to the Lord. God instructed Moses to strike a rock in the sight of the people, and it brought forth water so that the people could drink. Exodus 17:1-7. Those of us who live thousands of years later like to think that we would not be among those who constantly complain, that we would be the shining examples of trust in God and faith in Moses. But most likely, we would be just like the children of Israel. Remember that they did not generally have a one-on-one relationship with the Lord as did Moses. It was a superficial connection that was easily broken when the Lord did not meet their carnal expectations. How thankful we should be that we can have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ today. Up until this time, there were few statutes and laws by which the people lived. Mostly, people used conscience as a guide and did what was right in their own eyes, which was not always right in the sight of God. It was a time now for God to establish a definite set of rules for living that the people could know and obey. For this, he called Moses to the top of Mount Sinai to give what we know today as the Ten Commandments. And God said, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a graven or carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and who keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Exodus 20:3-17. Now we're going to take a brief break, and you can find out how you can be witnesses in 177 different countries around the world. We will be right back.
We hope you are enjoying today's show. We believe that God has given us a voice to impact communities and regions all over the world. If you would like to make sure that voice is heard, please partner with us today by visiting www.expressionradio.org and click donate. You can also text give by texting the dollar amount followed by the word radio to the number 84321. First-time text givers, please choose Expression Church of Huntington when prompted. All gifts are tax deductible. Join us as we change the world.
Welcome back. We have been discussing the Ten Commandments that were just given to Moses. And there, many laws and ordinances were given concerning all aspects of life and dealing with the people and with their livestock. Moses was on top of the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights while God wrote the commandments on tablets of stone, Exodus 24:18. Now, some Bible scholars have speculated that the fiery finger of God literally turned the stone into sapphire as he wrote, but this is just conjecture. While there, the Lord gave Moses very specific instructions for building a tabernacle in the wilderness and the articles that were to be placed inside of it. God obviously knew that the people would not be ready to live in freedom in the promised land, even though the journey normally would take less than 2 weeks. They would have to camp in the wilderness for 40 years. So, a tabernacle and established priesthood was needed. The Lord told Moses to ask the people to give voluntarily of what was needed to build the tabernacle. Fabrics and animal skins, as well as precious stones and metals, were needed for the tabernacle and its furnishings, as well as for the priestly garments. Then the Lord gave instructions for each item in the three sections of the tabernacle: the outer court, the inner court, and the Holy of Holies. Now, the most sacred article that would go into the Holy of Holies was called the Ark of the Covenant, or the Ark of the Testimony. It was to be built of acacia wood and overlaid with gold. Its covering was called the mercy seat, and two images of cherubim were to be on top of it. Now, inside the ark were to be placed the tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments, Aaron's rod that budded, and a pot of manna. In the inner court, there were to be three items: the altar of incense, the golden candlesticks, and the table of showbread. All three were placed around the sides of the tent. The table of showbread and the altar of incense were overlaid with gold, while the golden candlestick or lampstand was to be made of gold and all in one piece. Outside the tent were two articles, also made of acacia wood but overlaid with bronze or brass. These were the brass altar and the brass laver. The brass altar was where animals were sacrificed by the priests for the sins of the people. The brass laver or wash basin was nearby so that the priest could wash his hands after each sacrifice. Now, the tabernacle itself was a very large tent divided into two sections: the inner court, also known as the holy place, and the Holy of Holies, which contained the Ark of the Covenant. A thick curtain separated these two sections. The roof of the tabernacle was covered with a variety of animal skins that made it both strong and waterproof. The symbolism of the tabernacle and its furnishings is rich. The descriptions of all of these things is found in Exodus chapters 25 to 30. There were also explicit instructions for the construction of the garments of the high priest and his assistant priests and for their consecration. In the outer court, the altar and the laver represent repentance and death to sin, and the new life in water baptism, respectively. The articles were covered with brass, which was a symbol of judgment. Going inside the holy place, the three articles were placed like this, one on each side of the tent and then one in front of the curtain that shielded the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies. Now notice the metal overlay of these three articles is now gold, which represents divinity. The altar of incense represents the prayers of the saints that ascend to God and are stored up by Him as precious. They will be released as described in Revelation at the time when the church is in heaven. The Bible of Showbread represents Jesus, the bread of life that feeds us through His Word. And the golden candlesticks represent Jesus, the light of the world, who lights every man who comes into the world who receives that light. Beyond the thick curtain or veil was the golden Ark of the Covenant. On top were two cherubim. This group of angels was responsible for, in the beginning, to be a covering or a guardian of God's holiness. In fact, Lucifer was known as a cherubim. The Shekinah, or presence of God, dwelt between the cherubim. When the priest who was the high priest of Israel went behind the curtain each year on the Day of Atonement with the blood of the sacrifice to atone for the sins of the people, he experienced the presence of God. He alone was the only one who experienced that presence. Now on the hem of the high priest's garment were bells and pomegranates. The bells would sway in the presence of God that let the people know that the priest was in there and still alive, because if he had done something wrong, then he would be dead. There was a Jewish legend that said that a rope was tied around the ankle of the high priest so that if God did not accept the sacrifice and slew the priest, that he could be dragged out by the rope. The pomegranates were symbolic of the fruit of the Spirit that was to be present in the lives of believers today. The bells represented the supernatural language that believers would speak when they received the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Even some rabbis today believe that God and the high priest communed in heavenly language on the Day of Atonement, and that the veil moved in and out as though God were breathing while they were communing on the inside. If a person removed the roof of the tent and could view the layout of the articles of the tabernacle, he would see that they formed the shape of a cross. So many things in the tabernacle pointed to Jesus and the cross. He is our great high priest who constantly intercedes for us. His own precious blood atoned for sin once and for all, because the blood of animals could never take away sins. They were simply rolled ahead to Calvary until Jesus paid for them all. Even after the people promised Moses that they would follow all the words of the Lord, their commitment was short-lived. Aaron proved to be a very poor leader compared with Moses. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all of the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and he made a molded calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." Exodus 32:1-4. This is the same Aaron who stood with Moses during all of the plagues against Pharaoh and the people of Egypt. He is the same Aaron who watched God part the Red Sea and provide everything needed to this point for the massive crowd of people. Yet Aaron was quick to join with the people to create a calf, a golden idol that was supposedly the one who delivered them out of Egypt. Now, just before Moses came down from the mountain, the Lord warned him that the people had quickly turned away from the Lord and were worshiping a golden calf. The Lord told Moses to leave him alone so that he would destroy the people and he would start over again with Moses and his family. But Moses not only knew the promises that God had made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he knew the heart of God. So Moses interceded for the people and reminded God of what the Egyptians would say if God destroyed his own people. God relented, and he did not destroy the children of Israel. Exodus 32:7-14. When Moses came down from the mountain and saw the people dancing around the golden calf, in anger he threw the stone tablets down on the ground and broke them in pieces. Then he took the golden calf, burned it in the fire, ground it to powder, and then he scattered it on the water. He made the children of Israel drink that water. Then he turned to Aaron, and he let him have it. What did this people do that you have brought so great a sin upon them? Exodus 32:21. Moses placed the majority of the blame squarely upon Aaron. As the leader in the absence of Moses, Aaron had the power to say to the people, "No, remember the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, the Lord to whom you pledged your obedience." But he caved to the will of the people and actually led them in sinning against the Lord. And then he tried to justify his actions and actually made the ridiculous claims of a miracle. "And I said to the people, whoever has any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out." Exodus 32:24. "Really, Aaron? You made the calf yourself." When Moses saw the unrestrained debauchery of the people, he called for those on the Lord's side to come to him. Aaron had not restrained the people, and it became a mockery among the enemies of Israel. The Levites came to the side of Moses, and at the command of Moses, they began to slay the men who had sinned. About 3,000 of them fell on that day. When Moses then interceded for the people and even offered himself to be blotted out of God's book if the Lord would not forgive. God replied that whoever sinned would be punished, but Moses was to continue to lead the people toward the promised land. Exodus 32:25-35. Since Moses had broken the first two tablets of stone upon which the Lord had written the Ten Commandments, they needed to be redone. This time, Moses had to carve out the tablets from stone himself. Then the Lord wrote again the words of the Ten Commandments upon the tablets. Once again, Moses was on Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. This time, the people waited for him, and when he came down from the mountain, his face was literally glowing with the presence of the Lord. He put a veil on his face whenever he came before the people, because the same thing happened that each time he was in the presence of the Lord. However, when he went into the temple, he removed the veil so that he could talk with the Lord face to face. Exodus 34:29-35. Now the work on the tabernacle began in earnest. The people willingly gave of whatever was needed, so much so that they actually had to be restrained from giving. Oh, that such a spirit of generosity would flood God's church today so that the gospel might be proclaimed around the world. The artisans who built the temple were given supernatural wisdom in how to construct them, and then the seamstresses began to weave the heavy curtains for inside of the tabernacle. Exodus 36:1-13. The garments for the high priest were made for beauty as well as for durability. The breastplate was especially notable. It had four rows of precious stones, three stones to each row. Each stone represented one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they were mounted in gold upon the breastplate. The stones were of many different colors. Jewish commentators believed that when the high priest stood before the Lord with a question, that the individual stones would light up in succession. Each stone had the name of the tribe it represented carved on it. Ancient rabbis thought that individual letters would light up so that the high priest could get the answers to his questions from God. The mercy and patience of God was displayed when Aaron was anointed as the high priest and his sons were consecrated as assistant priests. In spite of Aaron's sin, he was chosen to minister to the people as God's representative. He had another chance to be a leader among the people, and this time to lead them to God through the laws and the ordinance that God had commanded. We will continue our discussion on the life of Moses next week. Until then, keep looking up and pray for the peace of Israel during this troubled time.
We hope you are enjoying today's show. We believe that God has given us a voice to impact communities and regions all over the world. If you would like to make sure that voice is heard, please partner with us today by visiting www.expressionradio.org and click donate. You can also text give by texting the dollar amount followed by the word radio to the number 84321. First-time text givers, please choose Expression Church of Huntington when prompted. All gifts are tax-deductible. Join us as we change the world.